The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 742. It's the 24th of March, 2017. On the podcast today, I have CEO Craig Brown and COO Ivor Jones of ECR Minerals. That's ECR. And they talk about their recent news and progress at the company. I also have Peter Earle, who is Executive Director of Independent Power Corporation. Now, they are Talao Energy's coal bed methane to power project partner. And they talk about, Peter talks about what attracted him to the project. I also have George Roach, CEO of Premier African Minerals, that's Prem, answering private investor questions. And there's lots of them. So strap in. Plus, I have Russ Mould, Investment Director of stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Somero, that's SOM, Marlowe, MRL, and Distill, DIS. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Plus, I also have the top three most liked RNSs on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And I've got to say, there's a joint number three. Oh.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Craig Brown, CEO of ECR Minerals. And that's ECR ticker. Craig, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you, Justin.
Now, you've been pretty busy. We've got some news out already. And like I say, you've restructured the company and you're taking it in the direction it should be taken in. But for people not aware of ECR, Craig, can you give us a brief summary as to what you're all about there?
ECR has a number of exciting projects. The main project which we're focusing on at the moment is in Australia in the former Victorian goldfields. Second project is in Argentina in La Rioja province. And then finally, we have a small investment in the Philippines. The company's focusing on drilling out two of these projects at the moment, and we hope to develop and take them further.
And just to give a bit of background on yourself there, Craig, you're no stranger to doing this, are you? I mean, you've got previous form of taking companies from exploration into production companies. Is that the case?
I've worked for 22 years in the mining industry, three companies, all of them put mines into production while I was working for them, profitable mines which are still operating and running today. And we started off at exploration all the way through to spending $270 million on putting a mine into production, producing 120,000 ounces a year.
Yeah, and is this your aim with ECR ultimately?
Well, I came into ECR as a part-time finance director, and things changed somewhat last year, and I've certainly started to turn the company around, and we actually think the assets of ECR were quite good assets, and so we've evaluated them, and we're working on taking them further, and especially two of the assets we're working on drill programs at the moment.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, I know you've got Ivor there, and Ivor Jones is executive director with and geologist with 30 years' experience. And you released some news yesterday, or the day before, so on new Australian gold exploration license and the Baleson project license transfer approved. So if we go over to Ivor, and he can take us through some of the detail in this, if possible, please.
Ivor's his title is he's a director, but he's also chief operating officer of the company. Here, I'll pass you to Ivor now.
Excellent.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Ivor. Good to speak to you. And like I said to Craig just then, I got your title wrong. So you're chief operating officer and a geologist of some 30 years standing and experience. So take us to the RNS and what it says and what it means, hopefully.
Well, essentially, ECR, or Makeda Gold, our subsidiary in Victoria, has applied for a license called the Timor license. It's EL6278. We did that last year, the middle of last year. And the license is adjacent to an existing license we've got called Avoca. Mm-hmm. Now, in many ways, it's a similar license to Avoca. It has a similar sort of styles of mineralization, although I think Avoca has more alluvials than the Timor license, or a 6278. But the really exciting thing for me with Timor is that there are a number of significant mining trends, historic mining trends, such as the Leviathan trend, where they were finished mining in the early 1900s. And since then, there's been absolutely nothing done on them. And in time of the early 1900s, the miners were really interested in anything over about, let's say, 10 grams per ton, or about a third of an ounce. And a lot of the stuff that which they said was about two pennyweights they were walking away from. Two pennyweights is about 3 grams per ton. And of course, with the changes of in economics of the world, then 3 grams per ton is of interest to us in a open cut type situation. And certainly if there's any of the older high grade mineralization remaining, then there's potential for later underground extraction of any mineralization that might be left. So for us, it presents a very exciting project. And on top of that, you know, what we've found is that directly downstream from the Leviathan trend are some significant old alluvial workings where there were deep leads, and there was in excess of 100,000 ounces taken out. I think the number was about 640,000 ounces taken out from the deep lead trends downstream. So for us, that means, you know, a good source. We know there's mineralization there. We know there's gold there. And now we have to see what potential there is for us with a much larger low-grade halo.
Yes, so essentially for the uninitiated and not au fait with, you know, the sort of measurements on grams per tonne, I mean, this project seems, on the surface here, to have good potential going forward, does it?
Oh, I, to be honest with you, I think it's a very exciting project. I think the potential is exceptional. I've worked in many mines before where old workings have been the centre of the evaluation, and when the exploration has been done, they turn into an open cut, and the old timers, they took the high grade core out, but the, you know, if there's any low grade mineralisation around them, or if there's a lot of pillars, for instance, remaining to make sure that the workings are retained robust, then that provides. People in this day and age an excellent opportunity with exploration. So yes, we're very excited about the project.
Okay, and so when will you find out? When are you going to start drilling this?
Well, in this part of the world, we need to get a couple of things sorted out first. We need to firstly discuss with the mines department what they require from it. There's a second thing where we need to have discussions with Parks Victoria, which is essentially looks after the Crown land down in that part of the world, and we need to make sure that we're going to work in with them to do our exploration and not do something that they're going to get that they're going to find is not suitable for their part of their the regulations. And once we've got that in place, then we should be able to, from the practical point of view, we should be able to start drilling relatively quickly.
Yeah, and so when you say relatively quickly, what time frame is this? Because I assume you've worked in this area before, and you're from Australia, so you know the sort of regulatory hurdles and environment there. How quick do you foresee this happening there, Ivor?
Well, when I say quickly, I'm talking sort of 3 to 6 month time frame. I think in Victoria, you'll see that the Victorian government has decided that the New World is a good place to, or they want investment into Victoria, mm-hmm. and so the regulations are changing with time, and what they're trying to do is to improve the environment for investment, and so things are changing quite rapidly there, and what might have taken 6 months before is now taking 3 months, and they're certainly trying to facilitate that and make it work.
Yeah, so it sounds good. I mean, you've got the support there of local authorities, but the sound of it, you've got a resource that you're quite excited about. So it's looking good from your point of view. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And you know, on top of that, we have the EL5433, which is our Baileyston project. You know, the transfer of that the other day meant that we're very close now to being ready to drill in there. We've just got a couple of items that we need to sort out in that one, but we are pretty much ready to drill now. It's the designs are there. We just got to meet Parks Victoria there and go through what the works we're going to do is there, and make sure that we're not going to damage the environment with respect to what we're currently doing, and then we're away. We should be ready to go.
Excellent. And as far as the Baileyston thing, I mean, what do you know about that as well?
Bayliston is an area where there was a significant amount of old operations. They were relatively small, but the thing with those guys again was that they were targeting 10 to 15 grams per ton, or a third to half ounce per ton mineralisation. And in the Byron shaft itself, we know that at Byron they stopped mining at about 91 metres because the steam engine blew up, which means the pump stopped working, and they didn't have a backup steam engine, so they had to organise one from Victoria, from Melbourne. The mine had flooded in the meantime, and by the time they pumped out the workings again, the drives into the workings had collapsed, and so they then had to target a secondary vein, which was full of antimony, and they couldn't get the recovery with the equipment that they had in those days, and basically they went bust and shut down. So we know that at 91 metres that the mineralisation that they were mining was still several metres thick, and 10 to 12 grams per tonne, and of course they didn't take anything out that was wasn't good grade, so there's a good opportunity for us in there, and we our drilling is to go in and test that concept that the mineralisation is still there, and then see what else is there as well.
Excellent. It sounds like it's all going well, and sounds like an exciting project, and you seem to be the guys to bring that to fruition. Excellent. Well, if you pass me back to Craig, that's nice to speak to you, Ivor, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the future.
Thank you very much. I'll look forward to that too. Cheers.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Craig. So as far as the project's concerned now, like you said, you've put some new guys there on the board with Christian and Ivor there, and go ahead with work there. You're getting things done. Are you quite excited as to where you sit at the moment, looking forward? Are there things in this project that you really get excited about?
Yes, I think the projects are very exciting, and certainly the company has a lot of good news to come. I mean, we've just taken on a new investor, which was announced several weeks ago, that we have a Chinese group coming on board, and certainly there'll be some additional dynamics with them coming on board. But there's the key reasons to follow our company are that we have a top management team with a proven track record, and I'm talking about technical expertise and managerial expertise, financial expertise. We have some very exciting projects in the company, and certainly we're going to have some good news coming out of them, and we do know that there's great news flow to come.
Okay, Craig, well, you know what's coming. You've done it before. On Vox Markets, we work on a follow system, so that means someone has to hit you at the follow button on your page to get RNSs straight to the front screen of their phone. So if someone's listening right now and they like the sound of what's happening there with ECR, could you give us those three reasons why someone should follow you, please?
Top management team with a proven track record and proven expertise. We have some exciting projects in the company, and we've got great news flow to come. I think that investors will be pleasantly surprised with what happens in future.
Excellent, Craig. It's good to speak to you and Ivor, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Earle, CEO and co-founder of Independent Power Corporation. Peter, thank you for joining me.
Good morning.
Now, listen, your name came up this podcast. We have Talao Energy on quite a bit, the guys from Talao, Tony and Colm, the finance director. And your name came up because you signed a binding heads of agreement with them for their power project, a CBM power project in Botswana. First and foremost, Peter, let's go through IPC yourself, Independent Power Corp. What are you all about? And, what do you do, essentially?
Okay, Independent Power Corporation, or IPC as we call it, was founded 21 years ago by myself and Colin Moynihan after he was UK Energy Secretary. And we are the British equivalent of AES, the power developer. We are the United Kingdom's leading power developer. Since we founded the company, we have owned and operated on five different continents, as well as developed some 7,000 megawatts of gas-fired, coal-fired and hydroelectric power plants, and we currently now focus exclusively on gas-fired plants, which act for the most part as the backup for renewable power plants around the world. And we are currently either constructing developing around 2,500 megawatts of new gas-fired capacity, as well as some small run-of-river hydros. So we are the UK's flagship power developer.
Yeah, so this is what you're doing with Talao Energy. This is your thing. It's your bag. This is what you specialise in. And yep. Yeah, and so it's neither.
And in Africa as well.
Okay.
And I think that's one of the reasons why they chose us. We developed and built South Africa's first gas-fired independent power plant, and we're building two power plants in Angola using very similar gas turbine technology to that which we're proposing to use in Botswana.
So how does it work, Peter? How do you do this? What do you do? I mean, like with Talao now, I mean, how do you take it forward? What do you do? Do you hook up people with funds, or what's the deal here?
Yeah, we've built power plants for governments in the past. We've operated power plants for people like BP. But the core business is that we package together a brand new power plant. We bring in institutional investors, including some of the big infrastructure funds focused on Africa, with whom we are working very closely. Indeed, there's one large infrastructure fund with which we now have a partnership, which they're going to announce in the next few weeks. That's a $3.7 billion infrastructure fund. We work with them finding projects just like the Talao Botswana one. So they put up the equity. But in this case, what we've agreed with Talao is that 50% of the equity of the power plant will be retained by Talao for the benefit of its shareholders. And then we arrange the rest of the capital and all of the debt finance. And as I say, that's what we do. That's our bread and butter business.
Yeah, so you know Africa quite well. And in relation to this, and for people listening to this, obviously probably Talao shareholders, I mean, what attracted you to this deal? Do you see the potential here? Because I mean, Tony Gilby's been on, and obviously he's one of the pioneers of CBM in Australia, and he says there's a lot of potential in the Southern African regions. And well, how do you see it there?
There is absolutely huge potential, and Botswana is the right place to be doing this. We've worked in Botswana for around 10 years. We've worked on two previous power tenders where Botswana Power Corporation was looking to install initially conventional coal-fired capacity, which we don't think is the right solution anywhere these days, because coal bed methane, when you burn it in a gas turbine, puts out only one-third of the CO2 of a conventional power plant, and the power plant itself costs one-third of the capital cost of a coal-fired power plant. So why would anybody ever build a coal-fired power plant anywhere? They're too expensive, they're too dirty. Our friends in Botswana finally came around to the idea that this was a good technology, and that had the perfect coal reserves and the perfect grid to be able to inject CBM-fired power. Before we teamed up with Talao, we had been looking at doing something like this in Botswana, and we'd spoken to some of the coal companies, mainly from South Africa in the past, who were thinking about it, and we urged them to do it. The difference is that because we've actively worked over the years with a number of equipment manufacturers, such as General Electric, who have designed their equipment to be able to run on CBM, and we've actually installed gas engines as a first phase in different projects, something which we believe makes absolute sense for the Talao project, using Gembeka gas engines, because we've actually installed and owned and operated gas engines which burn specifically on high methane gas. We know all of the tricks to be able to make the plant work efficiently and effectively, even though the mix of gas you're using is slightly different from the natural gas which you'd burn in your oven if you go home tonight and put the chicken in. So I mean, we've got a technological background, which is important. We've got an operating background, which is important. But we also have very good links with the equipment manufacturers whose technology is absolutely essential. And there's a particular kind of turbine which is particularly good for CBM. And this turbine we're looking to install in countries other than Botswana, because we think CBM's got a great future all around the world. And Tony and his team, as you say, are leaders of this in Australia. And so Botswana for us is a very good first project, but I think that we can do more. And I think that the Talao project at Lesedi is going to be a showcase, not just in Africa, but in other continents.
Yeah, well, Tony did say, I mean, you know, he said Botswana, when we scoured the globe looking for the right geological makeup and also political makeup, he said we settled on Botswana, but then said in Southern Africa as well, there's an issue there. And so, you know, if we get this up and running, there's potential in the Southern African region. But also, you are, like you said, you have connections there with GE. And so it's very much a marriage here, isn't it, that works very well with you in Talao, I think, is it?
It's a great fit. No, it's a truly great fit. And Botswana is a great country. It's one of the highest rated countries in Africa. It's Moody's M2, which is a terrifically high debt rating. They've got all of the mineral resources you could ever want on the planet, and a sensible government and a sensible regulatory system. It's a great country to operate in, and we are known there. We pre-qualified over the years for the different roles which BPC has looked for in outside power partners. We think it's a much better country to work in these days than South Africa or a lot of European countries, quite frankly.
Yeah. Okay, so going forward now, I mean, as far as you're concerned, what's the next sort of news milestone you're hoping to hurdle, basically?
Well, we shared the same vision of Tony Gilby and his team. We believe that it's essential to get the first capacity up and running as soon as possible. And so while there's a whole process for awarding 100 megawatts of power purchase agreement under the request for proposals, which was put out by BPC, we're looking to assist in getting a transmission line built as quickly as possible, which can handle not just 100 megawatts, but 250 megawatts. And there are international agencies which will fund that separately from the work that we're doing on the power generation, power island, if you want to call it that. So getting the connection accelerated is an important role which we have. But we also think that it's possible to start using the Talao CBM gas at a really early stage, using gas engines to demonstrate to everybody that this stuff does work commercially. And I think once we're injecting electricity into the system, it will be possible to persuade the government to work on an accelerated timetable, which would be our wish. No guarantee that's going to happen. There is a framework in place with a timetable in place, which we will meet. But we're going to try and see if we can do everything earlier than the last minute that people normally do in tenders. Excellent. So that if we get lucky, we're lucky.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, excellent. Well, Peter, it's lovely to have an overview of what you're doing there. And it seems like you're pretty excited about the project, as Tony is. And I know lots of shareholders are. So it's nice to get your side of it and to know that you are sort of well connected. And it's your thing, you know, because when
it's our core business. That's what we do.
Yeah, when Talao announced that, I mean, I'm sure many a shareholder had never heard of Independent Power Corporation, so it's nice to get your side of it. But as a standpoint, on a final note, so you are quite excited about this project, and you think it can be, a showcase there. Is that correct?
A showcase. We think it's going to be a showcase, and that's why we are very excited about it. It's great for Botswana. It's great for the environment. It's the least cost, least polluting system, and the power plant itself, because it can be turned on and off when the flick of a switch, is the perfect partner for anybody who wants to build renewable power in Botswana. And Botswana's got a lot of sunshine and a lot of territory for renewables. We think that this is going to be the catalyst for a resurgence in energy in Botswana, clean energy, which is what it's all about.
Excellent. Peter, lovely to chat to you, and hopefully we'll speak again in the future sometime.
I look forward to that. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Premier African Minerals, that's PREM, George Roach. Thanks for joining me, George.
Yes, hi, it's a pleasure indeed, and thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, well, listen, we've had lots and lots and lots of questions submitted. A lot of them are very similar. We'll get to those in a bit. I've taken out duplicates, so we've got a lot to get through. But, George, for people not aware of the company, can you give a brief summary as to what you're about, please?
Well, at the moment, the concerns and real interest in the company relate primarily to our RHA tungsten project in Zimbabwe. In regard to that, that's imminent back into production. And the other very exciting project also in Zimbabwe is our Zulu lithium and tantalum exploration, which is shaping up to be a substantial deposit.
Okay. Let's get the... anything else? Sorry, go on, George. I think cut you off there.
No, that's fine. All right. Let's... Okay. Then we get into the questions.
Yes, there's lots of them, and obviously we couldn't cover all of them. There's too many, but here we go. So the first one is, what will the annual income be from RHA in the near, mid, and long term?
Right. Well, we issued guidance late in January. In fact, in our RNS of the, I think it was the 30th of January, and that was quite extensive. So I'm not going to try and repeat the whole RNS. I'm going to say that what we did indicate in that RNS was that we expected to be back in production during this Q1 of 2017, that the initial target production was to hit 7,500 metric ton units of wolframite as soon as we were able to finish the commissioning and optimization process with the plant, and that was expected to give us, on an EBITDA basis, $200,000 per month. Mm-hmm. And that we were targeting to increase production over Q2 and Q3 to get closer to 10,000 metric ton units of wolframite per month, and that would result in a significant increase in the monthly revenues, and that revenue should start getting closer to the $400,000 per month mark. I don't want to go much further with that at this time because we need to have the actual experience and then be able to update the market, which I will do within a very short period of time.
Okay, excellent. Next one. Please, will you clarify the position of Darwin in the mix? This is causing a lot of market churn and with talk of outstanding warrants as well.
Well, Darwin does hold a number of warrants. I can't give you the exact number at this time. I can say to you that I believe that by far the bulk of the warrants are in the money. And at a point in time when people hold warrants and choose to exercise, I think that's good for the company. It's money coming in, but it's entirely up to Darwin and whoever else has warrants as they come into the money to take a decision to exercise, and that's it. So, yes, there are warrants, but that's all there is at this time.
Okay. Next question: if Zulu or Circa Minerals is sold, what would you do with the money? Would it be returned to shareholders as a special dividend?
That's an alternative. I can't reach, and I've explained this to a number of shareholders already, I can't take a decision about a future possible event. I'd love to see that that was a conundrum that I need to sit with when I'm sitting with money in the bank. Obviously, as a significant shareholder myself, I'd love to see a special dividend and or a return of money to shareholders. So that's a very attractive proposition, but it's one that I can't consider until one or both of those events, if they're going to occur, actually happen.
Okay. You've always stated that Zulu is a lithium and tantalum resource. What are your expectations on the tantalum deposit so far? And could you tell us more about the marketplace for this mineral and why it is of value?
Okay. In the reporting that we've been putting out on Zulu at this stage, I've concerned ourselves only with the lithium. And the reason why I've done that is that the to add in the tantalum resource work into the lithium resource work at this time is only going to cause a delay and further complexity in reporting what is the principal mineral. The tantalum is a valuable byproduct. I think that's the best way of describing it. Mm-hmm. So whilst we are getting analyses through, I have not tried to link the tantalum into the lithium resource at this moment. They occur in the same general deposit, but the focus has been on the lithium as opposed to the tantalum. The tantalum is there. We also have tantalum in an alluvial deposit on the surface, independent of the pegmatite deposits that tend to contain the lithium. So the tantalum is a multifaceted opportunity, but it is always going to be a valuable add-on byproduct and not the principal product. Tantalum's principal uses are into electronics and so on, and that's really where and what is driving that market.
Okay. Are you in talks with potential JV partners for projects?
I've stated in the public domain that we have had approaches in regard to the Zulu Lithium project, and there are some discussions that are ongoing. I unfortunately am bound by some confidentialities, so I can't provide any more details other than to repeat what is in the public domain, that there are discussions that are ongoing.
Okay. Is calibration of the XRT sorter still on track, and is production proper still on track for the end of the month?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. Oh, that's, I like that. Nice short answer. Next one. How long do you think it would be to take to have exploratory drilling work done at Katapu? Can the hardwood fund this? On a broader timescale, assuming the results are good, what is your thought on limestone production from there, and in what timescale?
Okay, that's a multifaceted question, yeah. That one. The exploration work, and we've just coming out of the wet season at Katapu in Mozambique, and it's been a particularly wet season. So it hasn't really been possible to try and commence any intrusive exploration work. But I am in the process of arranging for that to start. The hardwood production is not able to fund the entire direct and immediate cost of the exploration program now. Does it do so over a period of time? Yes, it does. Does that support the fact that the forestry operations and other operations there are a natural hedge against exploration risk, which was the rationale for getting involved in the deal? The answer to that is yes, definitely. But can it fork out the total capital amount to go and put a couple of rigs on site and expedite a drilling program and so on there? No, it can't deal with that capital payment. But over a period of time, provides the natural hedge.
Yeah.
In terms of timeline, the timeline is now. We have an exploration contractor that I'm going to use in Mozambique. They're on standby. They're ready to go. There are any number of drillers who don't have enough work, all lined up and ready to go. And I expect that the moment it dries out sufficiently for us to get on site and really get the work going, and I'm now talking a month, 6 weeks, I expect to start there.
All right. Based on results and fundraising, you don't have much cash left. Can you guarantee no more placings or death spiral finance?
I can guarantee. You know, guarantee is a hard word. That also goes to future. So in terms of death spiral finance, I assume what you're referring to there is direct convertible finance notes. Mm-hmm. And in terms of that, I have absolutely no intention of going down that road again.
Okay.
So guarantee is a hell of a big word. So I'm going to say to you very clearly that I have absolutely no intention of going anywhere near, nor am I going anywhere near at this time, any convertible or death spiral finance.
Okay.
Going back to the first part of the question, I can't guarantee no more placings. I think that it would be remiss for me to make that kind of statement. I've discussed the fact that I would like to expedite Katapu, and we're going to get back into Zulu again, I'm sure, just now. I'd like to – we've got a drill rig already working there. I'd like to expedite it as quickly as I can. I believe that there's a lot of value and rapid value that I can gain out of it. RHA is going to make contributions going into the future, but again, that's a bit of a future event, so I can't guarantee no more placings. I can absolutely give my absolute word that I will not go anywhere near convertibles, death spiral finance again.
Excellent. Okay, the next question is, the 3 billion share extension has made private investors nervous of dilution. Can you explain the plan behind the raising of the share cap?
I said at the time leading into the AGM that I felt that it was prudent that we should have this ability. It puts us in a position where we may be able to exploit a fantastic opportunity that comes across our desk. Not that I'm about to exploit any particular opportunity at this stage. I think that it's prudent. The comment has already been made somewhere that we can't have a hell of a lot of cash left at the moment. Yes, we have the expectations coming out of RHA. Is that going to be enough to cover an expedited ongoing enhanced drilling program at Zulu or whatever? I think it's prudent that we put ourselves in a position where we are able to access cash through equity placements. I think it was the right thing to do. Do I intend to run off and issue 3 billion shares suddenly? Well, it's an impossibility anyway. I couldn't do that. There are EU regulatory restrictions, for example, that mean I can't, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So it was. I think I've answered that as fully as I can.
Yeah, okay. And the next question is, when can we expect a Zulu maiden resource statement?
I can't give a finite date on that right now. We are working on it. We are doing a lot of this work in-house. My resource geo, who is doing the modeling, is in Zimbabwe at the moment. There's still some small data items that we need to get. We are going to conduct a very detailed aerial survey of the actual site to help us further define these various surface outcrops. We've obviously mapped this. We've done a lot of surface trenching, but we need to be very precise. So there is ongoing work. I would anticipate that all of this is going to come together within the next 6 to 8 weeks. That's as quickly as I would like to see it happen. But again, I have to say, it's a future event. I'll drive it as fast as we can.
Okay, you're probably thankful to know. We're down to the last three questions here, George. Here we go.
You know what? Not at all. I don't mind. I'll deal with all of these things as best I can.
Excellent.
Go ahead.
Okay. Are all assay results reported via RNS or just the significant ones? Are we still waiting on 15 holes?
We have reported primarily on the significant ones where largely where these tend to focus on the central core. If we go back to the Zulu drilling program, there were two objectives that I set out. The one was to exploit the extensions on strike, and the other was to focus on developing what we could get an initial resource out of. Now, I haven't reported all of the intersections on strike. Some of those are quite distantly removed from the primary central core area. Now, it isn't that there isn't mineralization and pegmatite encountered. There is. But would the extension a kilometer to the north or 2 kilometers to the north fall into what is going to be the initial resource, the maiden resource statement? The answer to that is no. So I've concerned myself primarily with the significant ones that relate to the heart of this body as we understand it at the moment. Further drilling on the extensions is going to be the upside and the ongoing development of the resource as we go forward.
Okay. Where do you see Prem going? If all projects come on stream, do you envisage expanding the company's portfolio? And if so, into what areas? Also, do you see a divvy further down the road? So there's a lot of questions there.
Okay. Look, Prem has moved over quite an extended period. If I think about it, the company was first registered in 2008, I think it was. We've come to the point where we're in production. I think that's a huge game changer for us. We're back in production again. We've got some very exciting projects. If we're going to get ourselves involved in other projects, they have to be projects that are significantly value-driven. I would need to see that these are projects to which we can have a direct expectation of revenue and or an exit strategy for that matter in the reasonably near future. I see that as Prem develops and moves forward, that it must be a production company. It must be producing. We must be a mining production company that is producing our tungsten and then hopefully whatever else it is that we are going to be able to develop. Zulu may remain. I've said already that we're in some discussions in regard to Zulu. It may very well be that we get made an offer we can't refuse, for example, on Zulu. That may happen. That would then put us in a position where we'd be able to look at other opportunities, but as I've said, either opportunities that are in production, very close to production, or something that we know we could add significant value to with a view to returning value to shareholders. I hope that helps.
Yeah, okay. The last question is the recoverable receivables from the partners at RHA due in one lump sum on commencement of production, and when is this now expected?
Okay, well, let's deal with the loans and loan account to RHA Tungsten Private Limited, the Zimbabwe company. The loan agreement does state that when RHA is back in production, the loan is repayable. It's as simple as that. Does that mean that this is all immediately repayable? The answer to that question is yes, that is what it means. Is it possible that RHA could repay it all in one lump sum on commencement of production? We've covered the anticipated revenue. The answer is no, it couldn't. So it's going to be paid off as revenue is available. Are we in a position where all of that revenue could be appropriated against repayment of the loan? I think the answer to that one is yes, and I think that's the real underlying question that is being asked. In terms of the latter part of this, I'm in the public domain as having said that we expect production in Q1 2017. We've only got 7 days left of Q1 2017, and I haven't said that we're not going to be in production in Q1 2017. I don't think there's much more I can say than that in terms of production.
No, you're right. Okay. Well, George, that's all the questions. Thanks very much for that. And one final thing. Of course, if people listening now, if they like the sound of what you're doing there, and you need some more convincing as to whether they should follow you, please can you give us three reasons, three bullet points as to why someone should hit that follow button on your page at Vox Markets, please?
Well, I think the most significant reason is one we've just been speaking about, and that's that I've said that before the end of Q1, RHA is going to be, I believe, is going to be in production. Well, I've only got 7 days left, so I think that's one of the most compelling reasons. Obviously, on the Zulu Lithium, the project, fact that there's going to be an anticipated maiden resource statement in the very near future, and I think those are two. I'm not going to go any further than that because I think I'd be distracting, particularly from the very first reason I gave, which I think is the most significant one.
Yeah, well, you could add that you're a shareholder in the company, so you know, you've got skin in the game, so that would help.
I've got a lot of skin in this game, a huge amount of skin in this game.
Yeah, okay. Anyway. George, okay. Listen, thank you very much for answering the questions. And like you said, you've got a busy period ahead of you, so no doubt we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, Tom.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. It's Russ Mould. You all right, Russ?
Well, Justin, how are you, mate?
Yes, I'm all right.
Good.
It's been an interesting week, to say the least, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Never boring. And certainly on the macro front, with lots of, you know, obviously Trump talk and so on, and we've had the US markets had its first 1% decline in 110 days this week. So it's you know, a bit of a pause for thought for people, I think. I guess it comes back to the old Buffett thing of, you know, when it comes to investments, don't get too hung up on the politics. I think the exact quote is, if you mix your politics with your investment decisions, you're making a big mistake, I guess, in the view that we don't know what the politicians are going to do. So
yeah, and I think I read a quote about him saying, you know, he pays no attention to the macro, essentially. It's all about the company. And he's thinking, if it shuts down, he said, if a stock market shuts down tomorrow and doesn't reopen for 5 years, you know, will Coca-Cola still be selling Coca-Cola? Yes, they will.
Correct.
And that's the kind of thing
exactly.
He does, isn't it? And
will Donald Trump be in office in 5 years? Don't know.
I doubt it very much. I think it's a one-chance opportunity for him. And I'm getting this sense that more people are picking up on the fact that he's... put it this way, he likes to stretch the truth a bit. And I don't know if you saw the guy on CNN. It was a live broadcast, I think, and this guy was basically saying Donald Trump is, and he's just used the BS word all the time, 6 times. And he said he's got away with it for so long, and no one's going to tell him now it doesn't work. And so I've heard that. It is the thing of, will he deliver on what he's promised, you know? And I don't think he can, you know?
I think it's going to be he's not a natural Republican. He's not a natural, if anything, he's been probably more of a natural Democrat previously. He hasn't got a big majority. You know, there is a lot of logjam on Capitol Hill, and it will be interesting to see what he can and cannot achieve. And certainly punting stocks around on the basis of that alone, could be potentially quite risky, particularly given that now a lot of those sort of US-type players have had such a fantastic run.
Yeah, they have, yes.
Having said that, we are going to talk about one today, interestingly enough, in a second. So
yeah, well, let's go for it. So the first one you're looking at today, Rich, is Somero, S-O-M. What's the deal here?
The deal, and this is actually a bit of a US player. It doesn't sound very exciting. It's a concrete leveling equipment specialist.
Oh, nice.
So if you think about it, you pour the concrete, it's going to set really quickly. And if it doesn't set properly, then the stuff's wasted and you've wasted your money. So they've got this kit that means that it's all, you know, you level it out very quickly, does exactly what you want. And it's basically actually headquarters in Fort Myers, Florida. It's a three-quarters U.S. business, and it's non-residential buildings. So it's schools, offices, warehouses, and retail. And, you know, if you do believe in the Trump trade and you do believe that he's going to get all this infrastructure spending sorted out, then this is potentially the kind of stock that you'd be looking at. It has had a good run. And to be fair, the numbers that came out last week on the 15th of March were pretty good. Sales up 13%, pre-tax profit up 22%. There's a net cash balance sheet there. And so in that respect, it all looks to be humming quite nicely. Management actually flagged improvement in Brazil, which has been a dog of a market for the last couple of years, and also the Middle East. It's not just about the US. That's the core to the story. The shares have had a good run up to around £3, but they're still only on around 13 times earnings for this year and about 12.5 for next year. There's a 3% dividend yield in there because of the net cash balance sheet. And it's almost the kind of well-run company you think a bigger one might have a dart at some stage. Now, on the downside, your risk is clearly... Donald doesn't get the infrastructure program off the ground and the US trade runs into the ground. And also, the share price has a good has had a good run, and it may be due a bit of a pause for breath. But the valuation isn't particularly lofty, and it does look to be, at the moment at least, in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, do you know what? I interviewed these guys, and I went to their website and checked them out, and they've got these cracking machines, basically automated, and they like you said, they pour cement, and they'll go over it and flatten it and level it exactly perfectly, you know, with laser-guided almost accuracy. Yeah. It's amazing little bit of kits they have there, for sale, all different kinds of sizes, but yeah, quite impressive. Okay, so the next stock, and look at the chart there, that has had a good run, fair play, hasn't it?
Yes,
Somero.
It has.
All right, Marlowe, so MRL is ticker there.
Yeah, this used to be known as Shell Shock when it was a cash shell, then Marlowe Holdings, and now it's just Marlowe. I mean, again, the shares have had a good run here, but this one's come up on my screen just because the shares have actually pulled back.
Yeah.
Having had a stunning run, they've come back from £4 to nearly £3. So it's one to maybe have a look at. And this is an interesting one because it provides fire and water services for safety, fire detectors, alarms. Also provides, you know, hotels, for example, with kit that means that they're providing clean water in the showers and there's no germs or disease there. And so in some ways, it's a little bit like Halma, the FTSE 250 company, which is one of my favourite companies because it's got the most fabulous long-term growth and dividend record. And what you're dealing with here is non-discretionary spending. You know, the companies, they've got to provide the safety equipment. The regulator will hammer them if they don't. And obviously the customers will be very upset if there's a problem when they're there with the water or with a fire. So you're talking non-discretionary spending. It's a bit of a buy and build. The company's made 8 acquisitions so far. It's building up a national presence. It raised 10 million quid with no trouble at 170p in September. Another 10 million quid with no trouble at 290p in December. It's been hoovering up small companies on low multiples, and it's looking to drive their margins up to its overall level. The interim numbers, £18 million of sales, half a million quid of pre-tax profit. Forecast from admittedly housebroker Cenkos have got that figure going up to £3 million of profit and then £4.8 million. It's still on some pretty fruity multiples, in fairness. 30 times forward earnings falling to 25 times. There's no yield as yet. But, you know, it's in a great area. You can see how in the long run it could become quite a profitable cash generative business. You know, probably one, again, to sort of look to pick up on weakness rather than when it's had a strong run. But there's been a bit of weakness in there. Maybe people just digesting those two placings, taking the numbers on board. But it does look to be an interesting company and an interesting market.
Yeah, and it's always nice to, you know, back one of these companies, really, that has this regulatory support or environment framework around it, especially with these days, health and safety and all this kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's not going to be loosened. It's going to get tighter, if anything, you know. So, okay, excellent. That's Marlowe. And the last one is Distill.
Distill, we did Stock Spirits last week. Distill, I mean, it's been around on the market since 2004. And the fact that market cap's still 10 million quid and the share price is still 2p tells you it's not worked out that well. It's been a string of losses, but it does look to be on the verge of getting to break even. Executive Chair Don Goulding's focusing on brands that he thinks can go global, like Red Leg, Spiced Rum, Blackwood, Blavod Black Vodka, and that does seem to be working. They had a stunning third quarter update, 71% sales growth, 56% volume growth, and now it's all eyes on the Q4 trading update in April. But it just does look as if after a long time, it may be time to, you know, raise a glass to this one. It just finally looks to be moving in the right area, in the right direction.
Yeah, and I'm not, says in the Mail. Do you write for the Mail, Russ?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Who do you write for? Because I've seen it.
Telegraph.
Sorry, I'll edit this bit out. So do you write for the Telegraph, Russ?
Yes.
You know, because
yes, every Tuesday.
Excellent, because it was in the Mail on the Share Punt of the Week there.
Yeah, I think the Q3 numbers were quite eye catching. So it's that's one that's popped up. So we'll see what the April trading statement's got
The
executive chairman is ex Diageo, so he knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah. So, and also, did you say they had a drink called Blackwood?
Blackwood gin, I think, yes. I'm not an expert on gin, but I believe it's Blackwood, yes.
Well, that is my hometown in the valleys of South Wales.
Oh,
so maybe there's
something about that.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll just buy some gin. There we are. Russ, thanks.
Bottoms up to you. Have a lovely weekend.
I will do. You too. Thanks very much. Speak next week, Russ.
Take care. Cheers, Justin. Bye-bye now.
Okay, here are the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Boom. Audio Boom. At 4, Infinity Energy, that's IMFT. At 3, AM Minerals, that's AMC. At 2, ARS, Asia Met Resources. That's a ticket, by the way, I wasn't being rude. And at number 1, it's there again. Wow. Colin will be proud and happy. Ascent Resources, AST, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And here are the top three most liked RNSs on Vox Markets. There was a little bit of an issue. You may have noticed it on the app. Well, it wasn't the app. It was the feed we take from the London Stock Exchange. There was an issue with the feed. And by the time that someone was at the desk there, we were calling them and emailing them. No answer, no response. But they did come out eventually. So there's a blockage in the pipe, the RNS pipe. And so they had to get a plumber down there to force it through. I'm not sure that's how it works. An IT plumber. At three, ECR Minerals, investor presentation and conference exhibition program. Joint third as well, Ariana Resources, gold and silver production commences. At two, the second most liked RNS, Powerhouse Energy Group. That's PHE, update on G3 UHT gasification system. All right. I'm trying to make it sound sexy. Gasification. And at number one, Asia Met Resources, ARS, notification of changes in substantial and significant shareholdings. That's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. It's muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.